Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-hosts.
Hobbs Yo-Yo.
Lord Shadow.
I didn't even know we had an audience.
So, wait, does this mean you agreed to be on the show without having listened to it?
Well, I downloaded a couple of episodes.
Oh, yeah.
That was a perfect pause. That was awesome.
Welcome, Sip Fanatics, Apoliturners, Polycasters, and what have you. This is episode 209 featuring Dan Q.
Purify thyself.
Macalouin.
I require more coffee to be harmonious, thank you.
Majin.
Next LP is tomorrow.
And...
Is it April Fool's?
And, oops, yo-yo.
Why does my blue drink taste red?
All right, that's nice. And myself, Lord Shadow, talking to you live from Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Ooh.
Thank you. Carry on.
You know, if you took a bow right then, we couldn't see it. You know that, right?
All right.
Firaxis released their second live stream of Civilization Beyond Earth is about something called the Seated Start.
Customization of the unique ability of each faction.
Yeah, for replayability.
And I think for the first time, we got a rundown of all of the sponsors that are playable and what their unique ability is. Although I don't know if we're calling it unique ability in Beyond Earth, but that's how we would understand it, unique ability.
Yeah, the one little thing they're stuck with no matter what.
Yeah.
Even without some of the abilities, I just like how the game starts. You get to pick your starting location. I mean, obviously, you have a set number of hexes out that you can place it in, but you're not basically penalized for not immediately founding your outpost right where you start. And there was even a unique ability that expanded that range where you could plop your first outpost down, and I'm kind of looking forward to that.
Yeah, one of the setup options, the retrograde thrusters with a wider landing area.
Yeah, that's it.
To go along with that, you could also reveal coastline with Continental Surveyor, or a fusion reactor gives you 100 energy, revealing alien nests with a lifeform scanner or the tectonic scanner, where no technology is needed to receive petroleum, geothermal, and titanium resources. Ooh.
Kind of reminds me of some of the settings prior to going in the game for Alpha Centauri. You could choose to be able to see the map in the beginning or not. You know, you'd have the outline of everything, even though you wouldn't know what was there.
It's a list that provides a bit of variety in there, though the map ones are very, very questionable as compared to the other ones.
Yeah, I feel like I need to flip a coin between fusion reactor and the tectonic scanner.
Yes, do I? For me, it's retrograde thrusters versus the tectonics, whatever.
Scanner?
Yeah.
The tectonic whatever. You know, I think inherently in your statement, you've already decided on the thrusters for the wider landing area, because you can't even remember the name of the other one. It's insulted.
Well, it's the question of, do you see where the strategics are, and therefore, before you get to the text, know where you should settle, and can settle, so you don't accidentally settle on top of one? Or do you take a look at the map scripts, realize that they're really crap in some cases, and go retrograde thrusters and therefore set yourself up with a way better start than the map usually gives you? Because you can't move your settler anymore.
I guess I'd just be afraid if the map was really crap, then the wider landing area would just reveal more crap.
Times has an AI or yourself been given a position one hex off the coast where normally in Civ 5 you could just move the one hex and be happy, whereas in BE, well, where you pick to settle is where you pick to settle. So, yeah, retrograde thrusters is the anti-map script issue. So I like it.
I would rather just the map scripts be
better
dealt with otherwise.
Yeah, too.
I guess reveal coastline, I guess maybe if you chose a random map, I could see that's very situational, but reveal alien nests,
The coastline one I kind of dislike in general just because it's here's a one-time map thing and it's not really going to help you much.
Yeah.
But the thing about that, though, is since you do get to see all of the coastline stuff, if you're trying for trade routes or anything else along that line, you'll be able to see any coastal city and the hexes around the coastal city. So if you're trying to get out there and explore and somebody's culture borders in their way and you can't necessarily get close enough to actually get rid of the fog near their cities, then at the very least you have that and potentially you can just go for trade route earlier to farther away lands.
I wonder how many of them are actually going to impact how the game plays out and how many of them are just going to be meh and doesn't really change your play style or how the general game progresses. You know, we can speculate about how these are going to work, but then, you know, the reality can be some of them might be just awesome and can give you a totally different play style, just the cumulative bonuses that build up, and others might just be kind of derpy and might not get you much. But that'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Well, I think it's all about the combination, like how you combine them. There'll be certain combinations that are better than others, clearly. That's the combination of all of the starting ones, not necessarily like, oh, in this section, retrograde thrusters versus tectonic scanners.
Yeah, but take the fusion reactor, for example. 100 energy, it doesn't sound very useful at first. Maybe it helps you rush a building, but that's about it. It doesn't have a lasting impact.
Yeah, but if you can, say, build up enough energy and that extra 100 helps you buy, say, a new worker faster, then that means you get up and running faster than you would if you didn't take it. Or, say, you found a bunch of money along the way and that extra 100 helps you get that new colonist faster.
Yeah, I suppose it's very situational.
Or can run negative energy for a while and not worry about it for the, like, worst case scenario.
Yeah.
I think we've always talked about whatever civilization iteration we're talking about, the snowball effect.
Yeah. Mm.
So when I look at these options here, I think, what is the most likely to give me an advantage in terms of that snowball effect? So imagine I already talked about the fusion reactor and then tying back to the tectonic scanner and what he also said, helps you decide where it is that you are going to settle. It's like, well, I can't use this resource right now, but I already know where it is. So I'm going to go claim that land first. And I also know, okay, if that resource is on that hex, I still want to be able to have my city be large enough in order to be able to work that. So I want to make certain that I settle here so I also get these food generating hexes. And then it's going to grow. And then it's just that exponential snowball effect. Whereas revealing coastline, revealing alien nests, boy, oh boy, I don't know.
You're going to reveal them the hard way soon enough.
Well, I mean, the only nice thing about alienness is if you're already pre-planning Harmony. Mm. That's about it. If you're pre-planning Harmony, then...
So well, go over next to it and be, hi, alien buddies!
Yeah, you can at least find out where they are and potentially go claim that land from them. Or try and farm them up to the point where they become a wall and protect you.
Carl0413 also in the thread on CFC revealed another option startup, which happens to deal with hydroponics, laboratory, raw materials, weapon arsenal, and machinery. So do you want an extra population at the start? Do you want to begin with pioneering? Do you want to begin with a clinic in your city with a marine unit or a worker unit? And I think from the very beginning, I'm thinking, well, we are landing, and of course, we being humans, we are landing on an unknown planet. We already know that there are aliens on this planet, and, I mean, well, really, we're the aliens, aren't we? So I think there's going to be some misunderstandings about actions and movements, so...
You want the guns.
I'm feeling kind of inclined towards a weapon arsenal.
That's the one I refuse to take ever.
I was going to say, if I'm going to have to pick between one of those, I'm going to take that extra population. Thank you. Hello, snowball effect.
No, you take the worker.
Yeah, I agree.
You want a snowball, you take the free worker.
Yeah, but we've also seen how the aliens are
nom, 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 nom.
A little skittish. I'd rather it not be eaten, because it's like, if I'm going to have a worker, fine, but I want to actually have a unit to protect it. So I don't want to start having the worker do something before I have the means to protect it. I guess that's what it comes down to.
I've seen the movie Avatar, and I know how this plays out, and I'm definitely bringing more firepower. That's what I'm doing.
Then there's also pioneering and beginning with a clinic in the city. Well,
pioneering is... got potential. For me, it's worker or pioneering. It's one of the two. And it's not because of settlers, because you're not going to take pioneering to start cranking out settlers on turn one, because derp. You don't do that on Civ 5 either. These things are expensive. That hasn't changed. But there are other things in pioneering that are useful.
It also saves you time researching, pioneering the future. It may save you, I don't know, 20 turns. So it's something you don't have to research. It's a benefit.
That certainly does go to the snowball effect. Tech is pretty powerful.
What does the clinic do?
+1 science, +1 health.
Ah, well, yeah. That's a bit strange.
I would say no to the clinic in general.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that great, to be honest.
I mean, you get an extra point of science right off the mark, which means you research faster. An extra point of health right off the mark, which means you can grow a little more. Whatever. Or your first city doesn't wipe out your health right off the mark. But, yeah, is what I say to that.
Other in startup options are, do you want scientists, refugees, aristocrats, engineers, or artists? And don't just think, well, I immediately don't want aristocrats because, you know, they're snobbish and annoying. No. Think about how it applies in the game. Don't let the labels get to you. Do you want +2 science in every city, +2 food, +3 energy and health? That's aristocrats. Do you want +2 production, or do you want +2 culture and +1 health in every city? To me, this is the most interesting choice. Not to say that the other two blocks aren't interesting, but I find this more interesting, not so much because I'm saying there's more of a snowball effect, but because there are more options and different options. And yes, you are also having to decide, in a way, at the start, what do I think is most advantageous? What do I think I'm going to be able to capitalize on in the absence of pretty well anything else? Not such an easy answer now.
No. Everything can provide a large benefit because of the snowball effect. The culture allows you to expand your world faster. The production allows you to... It's another snowball. The science allows you to research faster. So it's really a hard call.
I'm kind of torn between scientists and refugees, because on one hand, refugees, more food in a city gets larger, so I can work more tiles, I can also get more science, but then there's also science funding. But there's also, again, +2 science in every city, so that certainly supports more of an idea of you're going to have more cities than less, however we'd find more versus less. But I think on balance, and of course you can always play with this, you know, obviously in gameplay, you don't have to choose the same thing every single time or every combination every single time, but I'm feeling kind of inclined towards refugees.
You want your peasants?
I want them to know who's boss, yeah.
Peasants are food.
Soylent Green.
Dan is a cannibal. He has proof.
I don't mean that the refugees themselves are the food.
Yep.
Are you sure?
But basically, the options that you have is to this, to that. But once you get down to the energy one, you start going like, yeah, is 2 science worth 2 energy? And you kind of have to say no. Same for production. Then you get a health bonus, and then you have to question, is a health in every city worth more than production and science? Yes.
I'm certain what it is that people think at the outset of the game will change over gameplay.
Yeah.
But just on the surface of it, especially when, you know, we know that this is based off of the Civ 5 engine, and of course a lot of us are thinking about Civ 5, food feeds into more science and more production and more energy and more culture.
Cookies for everyone!
Yes, Cookie Monster. But you might say, but Dan, that also feeds into negative health. And I'm like, yeah, well, hey, there's obviously buildings that help with health. You know, there's this clinic thing. So I guess that takes us to the sponsors themselves.
The Ark gives you covert ops are 25% faster and cause 25% more intrigue. So a small look into the spy mechanics that we probably haven't been told about yet. Brasilia give 10% strength in melee combat. The Franco-Iberians are gaining a free tech for every 10 virtues developed. The Cavithin Protectorate, outpost development to cities, 50% faster. The Pan-Asian Cooperative, otherwise known as the PAC, 10% production towards wonders and 25% worker speed. The People's African Union, the POW, 10% food growth in cities when happy, but only when happy. Polystralia, cities that are able to send trade routes may support 1 extra trade route than normal. So that actually gives us a little detail about the trading system, because in...
Yeah, it's city-based, it's not civilization-based.
Yeah, and it's not like you can send a trade route from any city to any city, even if you just founded it. It has to be able to support trade routes. So means something is different. And of course, the Slavic Federation, orbital units stay in orbit 20% longer and getting a first tech when you launch an orbital unit.
Oh, and for the People's African Union, you mean when you're positive health?
Yes.
Instead of happy, but we know what you meant, but I was just
sure,
like,
whatever.
Your Civ 5 bias is showing, sir.
They changed the word, but didn't change the meaning.
Hey, if you're healthy, you're probably happy, so there's connection there.
There's the list. What does it tell us?
Well, Brasilia is kind of the weakest of them all, or at least the most boring. I mean, 10% strength is...
It does sound boring, but I don't know if it's quote-unquote the worst, though.
No.
Was it the American faction that had the spy advantage? Yeah, I'm not too hot on that. I mean, maybe they'll have a really good spying mechanic in this game, but I feel like with Civ 4 and Civ 5, I've never really liked spying too much. I think they did it better in 5, but I don't know. I'm kind of cautious about how that'll work out in Beyond Earth.
I actually thought the spy mechanic was better in Civ 4 than in Civ 5, but it's still underwhelming. Yeah.
Well, it's a question of how useful is it? And if it's useful, faster, and cause more intrigue, whatever that is, within the context of the game, it's still a decent, unique ability. And yeah, people don't like boring, but mechanical boosts like Brasilia's can make them better than some of the other ones. I wouldn't necessarily say it's as good as some of the other ones. Some of the other ones are actually way better. I would put Polystralia at the top of the list.
Me too.
For me, on the list, it'd be Polystralia, then the pack, then Franco Iberia, and then all the rest can just go away.
Polystray, one extra trade route per city. Boy, oh boy, when we think about trade routes from Brave New World for Civilization V, the choices that you have in terms of, okay, do I want trade routes that are going to give me food and production? Do I want some science? That is really versatile. And then for the pack, yeah, plus 10% production bonus to wonders. I'm thinking, eh, that's okay. But 25% worker speed? Oh, wow. I mean, yes, please. The sooner you can get those improvements that's more food, that's more production, that's more quantity X, all back to the snowball effect.
Also, you have to produce potentially 25% less of them, which is a significant number. So your build order doesn't need to include nearly as many of them.
You don't have to support them with money.
Yeah. And I know there's going to be a lot of people who complain about Brasilia. There's even like a whole thread about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just one?
Yeah. The other boring one, is the outpost develop into cities 50% faster.
That one has been like lynched already.
Yeah, people have been trying to lynch it.
In the community.
Keeping in mind that you no longer just take settler, plant something, buy mass buildings, and then have it work instantly. That doesn't exist anymore.
It's hard to measure the impact of this unique ability because it deals with a new mechanic that we are not familiar with.
Yeah, exactly. So hating on it right away, not so useful. You have to get in to see what it does and what other ways there are to boost outposts into cities faster before determining if it sucks or not.
Haters gonna hate.
Yep.
It's also the internet.
Of course.
Haters congregate on.
And then even you talk about the People's African Union, like you get 10% food in growing cities when healthy. That could be a very limiting, way more limiting than Brasilia's or the outposts.
Yeah.
At least the Slavic Federation, they do get the one free tech when you pop out an orbital unit. So that gives them flexibility in their start because that free tech could be almost anything depending on how you play it. There is variability in the start for them.
Yeah, that's true. That could be one tech further to getting your first affinity level.
Yep, or it could be a tech deeper in for something else.
In the free tech, Franco-Iberia is quite more advantaged.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One for every 10. But then again, you have to see how long does it take to get 10 virtues.
It behooves you to invest the most in culture.
Well, yeah, yeah. But the question is, how many virtues will you realistically get? Obviously, more than one free tech versus just playing slightly differently and then happening to get one or two.
And I think this is where you start now getting into conversations of these components not just being mutually exclusive. Because if you're thinking Franco-Iberia, okay, 10 virtues for a free tech, how am I going to get my virtues? Oh, right. So maybe I want to get plus 2 culture in every city. Or, hey, pack has a plus 10% production bonus to wonders. Production bonus. Hey, maybe I want engineers for plus 2 production in every city. So now you start getting into those considerations.
Yeah, and you also start getting into which virtues do I get into?
And then there was the third live stream for Civilization Beyond Earth from developer Firaxis Games. Quite frankly, I think really what came out of that one was we got to see the affinities and the different levels in terms of you reach this particular level of harmony, purity, or supremacy, and now you get this particular bonus. But what I enjoyed most about this, as compared to the last one, was actually the conversation on CFC, where COF says, man, it really sucks that we didn't get to see harmony. Who made that dumb decision? Pete Murray, the marketing associate for Firaxis, responds in the thread, I did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fun things do I get to do with Harmony?
Yeah.
Yeah, because this was a later game and they were trying to show off the different affinities, and I guess there was a lot of purity and supremacy love and not so much harmony.
Yeah, no, people are suggesting that there wasn't the art there or it wasn't balanced or blah, 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 blah. No, Pete had a reason for not showing the late game stuff, and you kind of have to take him at his word for why he didn't do it. But it's not because it's 2 months away from release and they haven't bothered doing the harmony stuff. In the realm of possibilities, totally forgetting to do one of the three affinities by this point is not high on that list.
Pete also explained that, "I was hoping to show that harmony doesn't equate to endless peace with the aliens. That's harder to illustrate with a late game save and much easier to show at the opening. I'm sorry if you were disappointed in the absence of late game harmony." Well, and in the first developer stream, it wasn't harmony, what I call capital H for harmony in terms of the affinity, but he showed, let's show what happens when we are just outright aggressive from the aliens from the outset, and then rebooted, so to speak, went back on the save, and said, now let's show what it means to be harmonious with the aliens, lowercase h. So we already kind of had a feel for that, and that was also shown in the early game. He was trying to show more about the decisions that come up in the late game to get a better idea of, if I managed to make it through the early game, what could I expect from the later game? And there were a lot of screen captures and like, oh, look at this particular unit for supremacy or purity, and here are its particular statistics, and what does this number mean? And someone was even like, oh, great, we're back to 10 hit points. No, we're not. We're back to 100. Do you not pay attention to the images? And so...
It took people on CFC all of like 30 seconds to realize that the purity affinity level is horribly exploitive. Explorer walls clearly be an exploit.
Would this have something to do with level 1 where aliens will not attack tiles with explorer units?
Yeah, just saying.
And when you compare that to harmony level 1, which is alien aggression levels return to neutral twice as quickly, or supremacy's explorer units can build an additional expedition, it's okay, but then it's purity and it's like, OMG.
I think it's too strong considering it's the first affinity level.
Yeah.
I think in the forums I posted that bonus should be a little higher so that the player can't easily reach it without making a serious compromise.
Or they can fix it to not be so exploitable, but still get the point across.
Yeah, like for example, with level 8, and each one of the affinities seems more quote-unquote balanced if we put it in a vacuum. You get X resources for free. 4 Xenomass, or 4 Floatstone, or 4 Phyraxite for harmony, purity, and supremacy respectively, because we've heard that depending upon these particular resources, that's going to help you construct some uniques that are tied to those particular affinities. But yeah, the level 1 is just kind of, whoo, out there.
Flip level 1 and level 5?
No. I think how to balance that out is other ways, because there are expeditions. So supremacy gives you an extra expedition. It would probably be best if, say, level 1 purity helped you with the expedition. So maybe while you're expediting something, they don't attack you, but otherwise they will. That would make it useful, but not overpowered. And level 1 harmony is just kind of...
Well, yeah, I mean, returns to neutral twice as quickly. Twice as quickly as what? That's a relative term for which we really have no definition, no understanding of what that means.
Yes, and if everybody is aggressing against the aliens and it's not individual level based, then everybody else on the map who chose not to go Harmony 1 is increasing aggression level, and you get to sit there going, but I want to be hugging you. And the aliens said, like, nope, you're human, get out.
Yeah.
Yep, y'all look alike.
Yep.
Oh. Well, if you were fast enough to click on the link and get a ticket before everything's sold out, but hey, guess what? Phyraxicon. What? Well, I guess we can have cons for everything. If there's a mine con for Minecraft, we ought to be able to have Phyraxicon at this point. But they did announce they're going to have their first official one on September 27th and 28th, which, of course, as we mentioned, sold out very, very quickly.
6 days.
Yeah.
Especially when you mentioned Minecon, how quickly those things sell out. It really isn't.
Well,
while, relatively speaking, but, you know, for a first time.
Well, yeah, it's a thing. It's kind of like, I kind of see this as the extension of a Polycon. Whatever you used to call it.
A Polycon reborn?
Yeah, except that Fraxis is doing it themselves.
It's not, quote-unquote, just about Civ. There's also XCOM stuff as well.
Yeah, there's that.
It's the spiritual successor to a Polycon. There you go. How appropriate.
I'm looking at the list of things I get to do, and I bet the thing that most of the people who are going are the most excited about is, I get to play Civ Beyond Earth a month early.
I thought it was about meeting the friendly mechtoid.
Well, I think Ripper 2 would be playing board games against the Firaxis designers.
Did they ever mention how many tickets they actually had available to put it?
Not really.
Because, you know, if it took them 6 days to sell 6 tickets, you know, not so impressive.
I went expediting to Facebook.
Uh-huh.
2K responded to someone that was essentially, what, sold out already? How can that be? They have said, first off, that more tickets may be released. Stay tuned. And I'm like, man, you guys are such a tease. But they did say, quote, as the debut con, it's a small-scale show, but we have a decent number in triple figures, smiley face, quote unquote. And someone also went data mining, and they said, hey, you said you're going to have a bunch of stuff happening at this hotel. This is where different conference rooms available, and the maximum number they can support is 300, so that might give us an idea for the tournaments and the overall number. And it actually kind of goes to one of the FAQ questions about this was, how come it's not being held at the Firaxis office? And the condensed answer is, not enough room.
Yeah.
Also, we don't want you in our stuff.
Yeah.
There's not enough room, and we'd have to put you in places where you'd see stuff that we don't want you to see yet.
Yeah.
So, no. And for those of us who can't make it, which are, you know, most of the Civ fans on the planet, the last FAQ question, and I'm glad they included this, was, I can't make it. Is there a way I can get involved online? And the answer is, while we won't be live streaming for Firaxicon, we will be supporting the event via social media, and afterwards we'll have summaries of events online at civilization.com. I will just say, please, 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 please include videos of the panels. Please, okay, thanks.
They haven't even said what the panels are. So.
Well, whatever the panels are, they have said they're going to be panels.
Enjoy hours of panels, presentations, and more.
Yeah.
And the panels, that's plural, so there better at least be two, I tell you what.
Our Dan will be having a strict word for you about English.
I'll probably be playing board games.
You'd think, though, that if they want to turn this into an annual event, that they would live stream, because it just seems like they're kind of going to have the event and then they'll put up summaries and it's like, take our word for it, it was awesome.
Well, you know? There'll be pictures and yada yada yada.
I think the lack of live stream is kind of following, at the risk of insulting somebody, KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Like, to me, live streaming is just adding a whole other dimension when they haven't done this already. Plus, there's also might be this thing of, if we live stream something and something happens we don't want the whole world to know about and to be able to see and capture instantly and replay.
That's what iPhones are for.
What's the equivalent of a wardrobe malfunction at Firaxicon? I don't know.
Don't worry, it'll all be captured on Twitter and other such places really quickly anyways.
That's true. That's a good point. It's all going to be on YouTube.
Yeah, but realistically, it's the question of, do they have the equipment to live stream? Does the hotel have a good enough connection for them to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Dear rest of guests, the hotel, internet access?
Denied.
We need the bandwidth.
All your Wi-Fi belong to us.
Yeah, I have a feeling the hotel's Wi-Fi routers are going to be burnt.
Yes.
And smoking.
That many Civ fans, yep.
There was the mention of a Polycon. Polycon 06 did happen. Unfortunately, a Polycon 09 did not. There was board game playing at Polycon 06 with Big Huge Games representatives. And unfortunately, Big Huge Games, which is a studio from Brian Reynolds, Civ 2 designer, no longer exists. It'd be interesting to see what board games are there, because I do remember Settlers of Catan in particular was played. So I'm certain there'll be that and more. Who knows? Maybe they'll even play Civilization, the board game. How about that? Oh, that would be meta.
I think there is an XCOM board game. It's rather new, but a Firaxis XCOM game.
Okay.
They're probably not super, super XCOM fans who are also not super, super Civ fans listening to this, so I can probably get away with saying this. But XCOM coverage is really the sidekick to Civ. So, you know, you'll get what you get when it comes to XCOM coverage. Okay, thanks. Great.
I have a feeling X's and allies might show. Tripper3K is asking, please, please, no simultaneous turns in multiplayer. For himself, Civ multiplayer was ruined by simultaneous turns. Making the game down to who can click first and fastest is so alien to the Civilization concept, it boggled my mind why there's no proper turn-based option for LAM or web play. There is. Now, my friend and I have our own rules around you play, I play, which is annoying and imperfect solution. Please, please add an option for proper turn-based play in Beyond Earth. Some of us don't mind sitting for 5 minutes while the other players take his turn. And as Imperator and others have said there is a sequential turn option already. And as you dig deeper into the thread, it turned into an argument about what's in or not in the game. And then it turned into an argument about you should never have simultaneous play in single player or multiplayer because it's different. And yeah, it turned on its head into a point where effectively somebody was saying you should not have simultaneous play mode at all in the game, despite the fact that there is the sequential turn, because it ruins the game, even though the person would never actually use it.
I think the problem is that the simultaneous turn mode, it's the most popular one just because it exists. So those who want to play turn-based don't find very many games at the lobby.
So I don't get what I want, so screw everybody else, to force everybody else to play my way and not the way that they want to play?
Yeah, basically.
I've never really felt that the simultaneous turns into just who can click first. I mean,
it is, but
I guess maybe then I just haven't experienced it. But my thoughts are whenever the turn starts, I go straight to where combat's going on, if that's happening, and I make my clicks there. But I would do that in single player anyways.
But you're not going to be like hyper spamming the clicks, because if two humans are fighting and you have, say, five crossbows each, and I can click faster to make my crossbows kill off your crossbows before you can take a shot with those ones, I've done more with my units on our turn than you have on your turn.
And that can also be measured not just by your ability to click, but also your internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say.
There's also hybrid mode, which was simultaneous up until war between humans, when it then goes to sequential. So there's options out there so that you can do the my move, your move, nice and calm, and not dealing with fast click nearly as much.
Yeah, hybrid was added along with the return of Pit Boss.
Yay!
For last July. So yeah, there are options.
There are options, and just because a lot of people like simultaneous turns, because frankly, while you're not at war, if everybody goes at the same time, the game goes faster, and that's why a lot of people like it. Realistically, the one problem with simultaneous turns is the barbs, because if you go simultaneous with the barbs, you try and move someplace, and then all of a sudden the barb like was there or is now in the place you were sending your civilian, and all of a sudden you had your settler go attack a barb. Or at least slow use of AI turn.
Just remember, have patience at the start of your turn when it's not really the start of your turn yet because the barbs haven't moved.
Just assume that until the barbs move, you're still in the AI turn.
That goes back to what you were saying, is that you have options. The thread starter kind of made it sound like there's only one viable way to play multiplayer and he hates it, but it's not true. There should be less to be butthurt about, but in fact, that just means more butthurt. So
yeah.
If he had his way, then simultaneous turns would just be gone. Thinks that it shouldn't be because that's not the Civ experience.
Mm-hmm.
It all goes back to people, and just like the No Quitters League, et cetera, in terms of the rules. If you don't like the way that this is played, then don't play it that way. It just might mean that you're going to have to spend a little longer maybe finding people that will agree with that type of play.
Mm-hmm.
But when the options are there, you make your choice and you live with it. I think this argument would have been stronger before hybrid.
Yeah.
This was before last July. I'd be like, you know what? I don't think that part of the community that is known to exist and to have known to have existed long before now. I mean, Civilization V isn't the first Civ title with MP. Gasp.
Crazy.
Then where was that option for them? Or where is that option for them? And now it's here. Don't worry. Be happy. Or in the case of Beyond Earth, don't worry. Be healthy.
I see what you did there.
Don't worry, be healthy.
There's another version of Baba Yetu that for Access Link 2. One guy with a little help, the entire thing. Baba Yetu Yetu Liye Binguni Yetu Yetu Amina Baba Yetu Yetu Liye Mjina La Poeli Tukuzwe Baba Yetu Yetu Liye Binguni Yetu Yetu Amina Baba Yetu Yetu Liye Mjina La Poeli Tukuzwe.
Yeah, a little help by who?
Maluka, that's not me.
But Mackie, you are the only woman on the internet, so really isn't okay.
Just because it's a woman, just because it's someone with a name that's similar, but not exactly mine, does not mean it's me.
It doesn't mean that it's not you.
It's really close.
Yeah, I know. When I first read that, I was like, wait a minute. I haven't been singing lately.
Oh, lately she acknowledges that she sings good.
Well, yeah, in the shower. Does it other people?
Wow, this is getting better. No. What are we talking about?
horrible jokes incoming.
The thing that was really sad was actually the CFC discussion that degenerated. Civ community, we're better than that.
Yeah.
It's fine. Express your opinion, but it went from expressing opinion and expressing differences of opinions to quite personal. If you don't like the cover, that's fine, but don't tell people who like the cover that they shouldn't like it because, I mean, my favorite argument was she's not professional.
Yeah. What?
You know, how are you... Okay, talk about definitions of the term professional, but let's just assume for a moment that's true. So what? Not everything that a professional artist does is good. Dot, dot, dot. So therefore, that doesn't mean that everything an amateur does is also not good. Ah, seriously.
The whole point was she did some covers of other game stuff, and it was good, and other people are fanboys, and she does useful stuff, so they were like, oh, well, let's make her do something in Beyond Earth, even though she has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that was the other extreme response. That wasn't as visceral as the negative, but yeah, it's just like, can we not just appreciate this for what it is, that it's a nice cover? It was nice enough that it got some official recognition. And yes, thank you, Star of Hope, quoting me, absolute statements are absolutely problematic. Thank you. I couldn't have said it better myself. Oh, wait, I did on previous episodes.
Yeah.
Recorded for episode 199 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, and the Chris D.
Civ sales data. Apparently the game has sold 5.84 million copies, and 5.4 million of those resulted in at least 0.1 hours of playtime.
Woohoo! That would explain why best achievement is only 78%.
Yeah. That's a decent chunk that I haven't played more than like...
So 0.1 hours playtime, that'd be 6 minutes, right?
Yeah.
That's not enough to even get past the Welcome to Dawn of Man loading screen.
Maybe if your computer's really good.
It depends when you start the counter.
743 million hours of Civ 5 have been logged.
Shit.
Yeah. Imagine is about 30% of that.
game.
Median Civ 5 owner has logged 29 hours of playtime. The mean is 127.3. It's a lot of hours.
Well.
Hey, why is Civ not on the most owned? Oh, there it is. It's way down there. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of Valve stuff in the
Yeah, place. I was going to say, there's, after you get past the Valve stuff, it's Skyrim and
free.
That's not even fair. Like, Dota 2, they've been giving away for free. Same for Team Fortress.
It's the second best non-Valve game. Or is it the third? I thought it was
the second best one.
I thought Skyrim would beat it.
Although I guess they can give away Portal 2 as much as they want. No one's playing it.
Yeah, it is. The second best non-Valve game in number of owners. Only beaten out by Skyrim and only barely.
36.9% of all registered games have never been played.
Yep.
That sounds about right for my library, although it's probably even a higher percentage from my library.
Although keeping in mind that people give away games, like Valve gives away games constantly.
Yeah. Hence the other stat about it being 6.4 million things owned but unplayed, because it doesn't reflect played before March 2009.
Mm, true.
Yep. Back then you needed other programs to record all your gaming hours to show off to people and show how much of a life you didn't have.
Yay! I gotta stop looking at my Civ numbers.
I'm surprised your Civ number isn't, you know, 100% achievements and all that stuff.
Oh, I don't care about achievements.
What sort of gamer are you?
There's an article on iDigital Times speculating that Civ 6 will probably come out in 2015. The long and short of it is that the article is basically saying that they're definitely working on it concurrently with Beyond Earth, which I think is a reasonable assumption. But based on past release dates, then definitely Civ 6 is going to come out in 2015. I'm not too sure about that, honestly. I mean, I don't have any insider information, but it almost seems like it would saturate the market. Seemed too soon for me because they're going to have Beyond Earth, and then Beyond Earth is going to have all of its DLCs, and then they're already going to come out with the next game in the main franchise, which has basically the same audience of players.
We're all still going to be kind of busy with Beyond Earth if they release it just a year later.
Yeah.
It's unrealistic to think that they would go for 2015. I mean, seriously, that's
2016, maybe, but
maybe. And I also think that they would want to learn from the new mechanics they've put in Beyond Earth, because even if they go back to the main Civ franchise, which is going to be different, they're still going to have lessons to learn and things to tweak from Beyond Earth. So any of those lessons that they'd want to apply to the main franchise, you've got to wait a little bit to see how that all plays out, just like how Beyond Earth basically takes off of Civ 5 mechanics that they've tweaked and changed based a lot on feedback. They need to have some time to get that feedback for the next game.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also depends on how much they want to expand on Beyond Earth after releasing it. If it's going to have one expansion, two expansions, I think we don't know that yet.
And I don't think they know that yet either, because there are these things called sales.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
If it sells, we'll make more. If it doesn't, well, too bad.
That was a good run.
Moving on. 2015, 2016, yeah, both seem way too early. Even if you don't factor in an expansion or anything else, say BE is built standalone and they patch it a couple times and then walk away, that would still be too early. Unless it flops so horribly that no one's playing it, and then they would want to fill something in. But even on the basis of it, I mean, it's end of 2014, so basically early 2015. So
yeah, so yeah. 2015 at all would be way too soon.
Yeah, and then early 2016, that's just a bad time in general to release anything. January, February, March, no. Which means, you know, June, July, maybe the fall, probably the fall for a new release. Because it was going to be Civ 6 released in a year. It will be in the fall so that they can get up to the Christmas sales push, just like they've done for, you know, most every other release of Civ. As said, you don't want the core franchise promptly overrunning something you're making as a secondary to the franchise.
This was the latest, actually, in a series of articles from the iDigital Times speculating about when Civ 6 is likely going to come out. It started last August, because what happened in this article from July, there was a link to the previous article, which was in December 2013, and it linked back to an original article in August. It started with, "One thing is for darn sure, a Civilization 6 announcement is coming. Not necessarily anytime soon, but eventually."
Yeah.
Based on past experience, I think you're pretty safe in that assertion. You know, I don't think that anyone's going to disagree with that.
No, wait. They're going to pause long enough that they'll reboot the numbering system. They'll go back to Civilization because it's taken too long, just like Thief. There you go.
I thought you were going to say just like Star Trek
or Spider-Man.
That's cheap.
And then in December, they're like, Civilization IV Colonization came out in September 2008. Beyond the Sword came out in 2007. Civ 5 came out in September 2010. Civ 4 came out in 2005. Civ 3 Conquest came out in 2003. I'm not going to predict a major trend here, but the point is it's clearly going to be a couple of years. And it's like, yet you're not comparing the same thing. Civilization IV Colonization was not an expansion to Civilization IV. Like, Beyond the Sword was an expansion to Civilization IV. Civilization IV Colonization was kind of its own pocket based off of the Civ IV engine and not like Beyond Earth. We've said before, how do we know it's not like Civilization IV Colonization? It's not called Civilization V Beyond Earth, is it?
Not to mention that Colonization was a direct port of code that already existed previously, slapped onto the Civ 4 engine and released. It's not like they actually developed anything, because they kept a lot of the bugs and the problems from back when it was originally released. So that does not count as a development. It's just a slap and go.
Yeah, it was a side project. Yeah, I think Beyond Earth is quite more important in that regard. And I don't know if it might be Civilization 5.5, maybe. It could delay Civ 6, as you said, a couple of years.
I don't know. I kind of got the impression in my mind that at some point in the development, 2K, which owns Firaxis, said, okay, we've got this idea for finally, you know, revisiting Alpha Centauri in some way, but we can't call it Alpha Centauri because Electronic Arts holds on to the IP for that still. Gurren Arg. I'm editorializing especially the Gurren Arg. But anyway, they probably also said, then there's also this thing we released in 2007 called Civilization Revolution, and there's a lot of clamoring for a sequel to that. But Firaxis, you can't be doing both, and we kind of want them to come out at more or less the same time because the audiences are slightly different. So they gave Firaxis Beyond Earth, and they shipped off Civilization Revolution 2 to 2K China.
Not quite how that worked out, but sure.
I could see that being a discussion. I could see that being a discussion.
I could see Firaxis being asked, hey, do you want to do the crappy version of a mobile app update and then lie to people about it actually being, you know, new? And Sid saying, no. And 2K going, well, whatever. Give 2K China for that.
If Firaxis had actually taken the development reins for Civilization Revolution 2, a lot of those things arguably wouldn't have happened. But I could see there being a conversation about which direction they want to go, which, considering Firaxis' mobile offerings since Civilization Revolution and since Civilization 5's release, there's kind of that.
They have the potential, but 2K probably said, by the way, you have 100 grand in your budget to do it. And Firaxis said, would you like us to paint shiny pictures somewhere? Because that's how much that'll cost.
If we knew the budget, consider, man, if we had that detail, it'd be even easier to ascertain what more likely actually went down in terms of a conversation.
Yeah.
But iDigital Times, still in December, is like, Firaxis has essentially confirmed they will eventually make Civ 6, because obviously.
Firaxis has confirmed they will obviously make Civ 10, because obviously.
Obviously. But remember also iDigital Times, Firaxis is not an independent studio. They are owned by 2K. So they would not confirm one way or the other. That would be 2K confirming there would be one or the other. But anyway, then in July, they then say Firaxis is not a big studio, although it is part of a bigger parent company. So this is the first time they're writing since Civilization Beyond Earth was publicly announced as existing. He says, nevertheless, I feel extremely confident in predicting two things. First, Civilization VI is already well underway. Second, it will come out sooner than you might expect, either in late 2015 or early 2016. And I kind of cringed when I realized that was in the July article, because that might have been a more reasonable statement before the announcement of Beyond Earth.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
People were like, what is Firaxis doing anyway? We had Brave New World came out, XP, you know, in the summer of last year. We've had some patches, but haven't heard anything. Haven't heard anything. 2K's doing this Civilization Online, massively multiplayer online thing with this Korean-based company, XL Games. What is exactly happening on the front here? But I think the strongest argument, and really the only compelling argument I find, is still embedded in the July update from iDigital Times, which is, want some more direct evidence that Civ 6 is in progress, quote-unquote. And I'm thinking, do you actually have direct evidence to begin with? I haven't seen any actual direct evidence thus far. How about this? For the last two Civ games, the lead developer of the last expansion pack is the developer for the next game. Brave New World was developed by Ed Beach. And what's Ed Beach up to these days? Not designing Civilization Beyond Earth. That responsibility goes to others. No, Ed Beach is still at Firaxis, still serving as lead programmer, but on what? Quote unquote. Okay, that's still not direct evidence, but in terms of an inference or circumstantial evidence, that has some ring of truth, although of course I think that's
all very circumstantial.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also in the context of that's what we would like that to mean. So clearly the person writing, they're also a Civ fan, so this is what they want. So this is the picture. They've got a, fine, you've got a piece to a puzzle, but you don't know what the puzzle looks like, but you've decided what you want it to look like, so that's what it means to you.
Well, I think it's reasonable to assume that they're working on it, and I don't even think it's that big of a stretch to say that Ed Beach might be working on Civ 6, but I just think it's just a big stretch to say it's coming out next year, and I don't really see that there's anything really supporting that other than whoever wrote this article saying so.
Replayability.
Oh, really? Are we going to talk about it being a word? Seriously?
The initial article is from 2010, and this follow-up is from 2011. I came across this, incidentally, researching something for topics for the show, and Ben Abraham wrote, there's a word, it's replayability, when we're talking about a video game that comes up when you play a game for the second, third, or fourth or many times. Look up the word in a dictionary. Oh, wait, it's not a word because it's not there. So therefore, we shouldn't use it. He also makes the point that replayability is a word that has a special meaning and helps keep outsiders on the out.
What?
His argument being, again, we use this word to let non-gamers know that we don't think much of them for being non-gamers.
What?
That's kind of dumb.
If you're going to use replayability, given that, okay, it's not a quote-unquote defined word, but it doesn't mean that the word is not being used. So if you're going to use the word replayability, then explain what you mean in context. And I think that happens time and time again when you're talking about a video game, whether it's Civ or something else. I think that's the big thing. If you just throw around the word replayability and say, this game's replay value is 9 out of 10, or this game is highly replayable, it has great replayability, and you don't explain, then to me that's more of an issue of the person using the word, not the word itself.
Well, yeah, I think that when it comes to that, that's more like a bad review of the game. And I think the word itself is fine. And I think that enough people, and it's used enough in the same kind of context that people know what it means. And I don't really have a problem with the word itself. But I think what you're going to is just bad reviewing, where they're using the one word as a catch-all to mean something but not explaining why it is. And that's just a bad writer.
The writer's just not worth talking about, actually.
Yeah, that's why I was like, why are we talking about this word?
No, it's just that this guy has got so much hate that you've basically given him a podium, and it is disgustingly bad. Like, he doesn't even understand what the word means, let alone have a brain to think replayability with respect to video games. Can a video game be replayed? Would you want to replay a video game? If you don't understand the fact that there's differences between games, as in there is a story game that you play it, you go like, eh, whatever, never play it again. Then there's a game like Civ that if you can't replay it ever again because you've already done eh through it and you're done, it would suck. The concept of replayability, which, by the way, is a word because I said so, get it in the dictionary now. It's a measure of the ability to replay a game. It's one of those things about the English languages that we can think up a brand new word for something that hasn't been written down yet. Kind of like every single word in history. We made it all up. Somebody eventually wrote it down. Guess what?
English. We're great at making up words.
That's right. The English language.
Okay, yes, by my choosing this topic, in a way, I have given this individual a podium.
Way too much airtime.
However, he is not the only person who's questioning this term. So I chose this topic to respond to, if however briefly, continue the conversation and point out that what he is taking as fact and what he is taking as in terms of a slight, like is again his inference that this is an insider term like leet or pwn, that no, let's tackle this head on, because if it's just kind of out there and I'm like, okay, I see it's out there and I feel like if I don't respond myself, even if it's just short and direct and moving on, then at least in my mind, then I'm accepting, oh yeah, you're right, I guess replayability is not a word. But guess what, Ben? Did you look up the word replay? Is it in the dictionary? Why, yes. Yes, it is. So like Madjin said, this is a measure. The ability, replayability, is the measure of replay. He does say in his article, Ben, that he says, okay, fine, let's take this at face value. What are the authors trying to communicate when they say that a game is replayable? He then defines replayability as the ability to play the game again, making different non-trivial choices. Then he says, I'm still not satisfied with this definition, because what defines the line between trivial and non-trivial? And I think this goes back to, again, who is using the term replayability and what's the context? Are they explaining the context? Whether you agree with the context or not, that's a completely separate consideration. Have they explained themselves well so that you understand what it is that they're saying? Because that's the purpose of language, right? In order to be able to understand what someone else is communicating, so we're not thinking about different definitions of things, because then that confuses what it is that someone's trying to say and the message that they're trying to get across. And I think that's kind of his failing here, is that he assumes that everybody who uses the term replayability is using their own definition in a vacuum, and that's simply not true.
I actually take issue with the whole, well, you need to make non-trivial choices each time you play. You know, I think that's really nonsensical, because I can play the same track on Mario Kart with the same little racer every single time and still have a blast with it. Because really, there's some games where choices don't matter as much as just the experience of playing it. And so I didn't really get that. But I think at the end, after this, I think his response, Ben's response to us would be, well, you're part of the gamer cabal suppressing everybody. You guys are we're keeping the literate public down by making words up.
Basically, this guy knows nothing about anything.
You know nothing.
And frankly, I don't have the time to actually give the historical lesson on all sorts of cultures and subgroups. And there's just so much stuff that basically this guy needs to go see a psychiatrist and get some help. He's got issues.
And then I also wonder at the same time, just how much is he actually believing what he's writing?
Oh, yeah. Who knows?
Right? I mean, that he could have a completely different view as, I think replayability is a great word, but I wonder if there's really impassioned feelings about this term.
I wonder if I can troll bait anyone.
Exactly. You know, that could also be. And in either case, hey, it got us talking about it, and it is a term that we use a lot. Maybe not a lot on this show. Replayability, which is kind of inherent in our conversation when we start talking about, well, like with Beyond Earth. Oh, look at all these different options at the start. Well, you could choose this. But then what if you chose that in combination?
Yeah, well, with strategy, turn-based type of things, we're not just going to play it once and then, okay, I'm done. Like you would a role-playing game.
Yeah.
Exactly. As for the response, I'm going to condense that considerably because he goes off on some tangents that really aren't directly related to this. But he does say, Lyndon Warren says, consider this my rebuttal to this. We cannot create a complete holistic definition of game, which includes all of the things that people regularly and habitually label as games. What is startling is that we don't need one. Quote unquote. And moreover, put another way, language is a tool. We use words because they have effects. So I think, again, that ties into if you're going to use a term that is not defined in a dictionary, or if someone is really a non-gamer or just a starting gamer and they haven't come across that term before, then define how you are using the term. And then you don't have to keep redefining the term. You introduce it. It's like using an acronym. Tell us what the whole acronym means. You don't want to say the whole blah again. Then tell us that this is the acronym you're going to use, and then use it through the rest of your writing. And then we will understand what it is that you are referring to. Plain and simple.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Pete said that Harmony factions will, and in all caps, will kill aliens in the course of the game, at the beginning, in the middle, maybe even at the end. You've got gameplay tools to help manage that relationship with the wildlife, but sometimes guns are the tool you use. Whoa, okay.
Give me your genetic material.
Also, that's a little too close to my city. Back off.
Yeah. It's like, that's nice, Siege Worm, but can you please stop wrecking all of my improvements? I know you want to give me a hug and all, but...
Can you go hug the other factions instead? Thanks.
It's like, I want to be harmonious with you and all, but we need some time apart.
Yeah.
I need my own identity, not just my identity tied to you. Please give thanks.
Oh, dear.
And then comes the alien and human soap operas and the fan fiction and all. It just, you know.
Oh, it's at the end. The fan fiction was going to happen anyway. You can't stop it.
And I think that's going to take us to Call for Mackie.
Oh.
Yeah. Got to have a Call for Mackie.
Right? Mackie, Mackie, Mackie.
Closing time?
Mackie, what else sings? Semisonic.
No. You will not sing. Why are you trying to get me to sing?
People at the forums apparently want you to.
Recorded episode 200 and had Firaxis Games on as part of that celebration. We gave away copies of Civilization V Brave New World, and question that someone had to name what your faction was going to be based on coffee. So I think the song that you will be singing is the theme to that faction that you're going to create, Mackie. You know what I love about that silence? I think she was seriously considering it.
I was trying to keep a good response.
Defenses are breaking down.
No.
Victory is mine.
Ooh, let's do a cooperative song between Makalua and Malakua.
Wow. Hey.
You fanboys.
Now there's harmony, if you know what I'm talking about.
Dot, dot, dot.
Mackie would throw her coffee at me, but she wouldn't want to waste it.
Exactly.
Computers and coffees don't mix.
She'll probably throw the mug at me after she's finished it. Uh-oh.
Hey, there we go. I got a whole collection of mugs up here.
Here's a mug for your mug.
Yes.
On that pleasant note.
Rough to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of us.
Wonderful wizard ending?
Yeah. So this has been Polycast episode 209, and we were joined by our co-hosts, Dan Q.
as wonderful to listen to as always.
Makalua.
Add to shopping list. Buy more mugs to throw.
Madjin.
Add to things to do. Let Mackie know where Dan lives.
Lord Shadow.
My pleasure.
And I'm Hob Jojo. Are we done now?
Is it over yet?
I want to go home.
Oh my gosh, speaking of Axis and Allies.
What, your mom?
It's not a podcast without at least one, your mom.
Okay, next question. Whose topic is it?
It's actually yours.
Oh, what? Right. Lols.
Oh, right.
We know you have an opinion on this.
Pete Murray did say on this live stream that some of the bonuses might change since they're still balancing the game. Listeners, you can ignore everything we said for the last... No, just kidding.
yep.
Remember those Polycast guys talking about stuff that was never realized?
Now we're just going to change everything so they'll be totally wrong.
Record date August 30th, 2014. Baba Yetu cover clips courtesy Peter Hollins and Malika. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.